Hey everyone, welcome to Extra Serving, a Nation's Restaurant News podcast. I am your host, Holly Petrie. We are here to talk about ghost kitchens today and the new round of ghost kitchens that are popping up. Joanna Fantozzi recently wrote a really interesting article about it. And so we're going to have her on the podcast today to talk about it. It's going to be really fun. She recently spoke about it on First Bite. So we're going to dive even deeper into that. We are also going to talk about the earnings palooza, my favorite word, from Lollapalooza, as we've learned. Leanne deep sighs as I say palooza, but we are going to talk about palooza. The earnings palooza. So get ready for that. But before I go to that, let me introduce my co-hosts.
I am Sam Okus, editor-in-chief of Nation's Restaurant News.
And I am Leanne Zinsmeister, managing editor of Nation's Restaurant News.
And now a quick word from our episode sponsor. When it comes to finding a one-source solution for all your food service and equipment needs, Broster literally means business. From innovative equipment like their new E-Series line of high-efficiency pressure fryers to one of their franchise-free, trademark food programs featuring their world-famous, tender and juicy, genuine Broster chicken, Broster has been helping operators make their business better for over 65 years. Discover what Broster can mean for your business and visit broster.com today. All right, guys. So what's been happening in the world? I listened to the Taylor Swift album finally.
I don't think our audience wants us to hear about Taylor Swift anymore. We can't talk about this anymore.
I just had to say that I listened to it. I just had to put that on the record. I had to put it on the record that I listened to it.
Now the world knows.
I had to put it on the record that I listened to it. Anyways, that's my thing.
Okay.
So what's been happening with you guys? What's been going on? What's been happening in your lives? Any interesting restaurants you guys have been to?
Interesting restaurants. Do I go to interesting restaurants anymore?
I went to a Broadway show last weekend. I saw Almost Famous. And then we went out to Five Napkin Burger for dinner after the show, which is like a step up from our usual default of Shake Shack. A step up merely meaning that it is like a sit-down casual dining restaurant. I obviously have nothing against Shake Shack. I love Shake Shack. But I also
Shots
love Five
fired.
Napkin Burgers. So that was a fun, that was my fun restaurant experience. And on Monday I ate a lot of candy, obviously. And then I got my COVID booster. So I haven't done anything since then. So
fun times.
That's my recap.
In lieu of restaurants, I will just say I had a very lovely time trick-or-treating with my kids on Monday because our old neighborhood was pretty blah when it came to trick-or-treating. Our old community, people went to other neighborhoods, and so ours was just kind of boring. But we have moved into, like, the community for trick-or-treating. I have been told that it ranked as like the third best neighborhood in Columbus to go trick-or-treating. So there were like literally hundreds of kids and it was just a good time. Lots of fun, very jovial, much candy to be had. Of course, as all parents know, that has also turned my children into little monsters this week. So just dealing with that. And it's not just the sugar. It's just the crave of the sugar. It is the, no, you can't take five pieces of candy to preschool with you for your snack. And then the meltdown on the floor that ensues. So anyway,
That Halloween was on a Monday this year feels very inconvenient for parents. Is that true? Has it made the week longer starting it out that way?
I don't know, actually. I think it was okay. I mean, it would be nice to have it at the end of the week and have something to like look forward to, roll into the weekend, reset the kids. But you know what? They have enough candy to last until next April, basically. So it's going to be – I mean, we literally came home, dumped their buckets, and went back out was how much candy they got. And my son, who is about to turn four, he called it himself. He was like, Dad, I'm going to stay here. Like, that's how much candy they got. He was so tired from getting so much candy. He tapped out. He recognized it himself. And I went back out with Mabel, who is six. So it didn't matter what day of the week those two, they had fun and, you know, they have all the repercussions from the candy regardless.
Well, that I was recently in San Antonio.
That's right.
So I actually did something fun.
You went to many restaurants.
You did.
I went to an excessive amount of restaurants. And I went to Dia de los Muertos. I got to celebrate Day of the Dead there, which was very exciting, even though Day of the Dead happened to be yesterday.
I was going to say, was it an event or a restaurant?
It was an event. So they had they have this celebration called Spiritlandia in San Antonio, which is organized by a chef down there. And so it's very exciting, and it's like this whole parade and on the river walk down there. And so it has all these boats and floats and all sorts of things. And I'm rhyming like Dr. Seuss now. And so boats and floats and.
You put two words together as a rhyme.
You know what? Shame on you. So it's really fun. And there's a lot to do in San Antonio. I had no idea. It's the seventh largest city in the U.S. I learned so much. I rode in a sidecar, got to see the whole city from the little view of a sidecar. And then the back of a Vespa. It was very cool. I got to, I was very safely in.
Exhausting.
Yeah, extra serving doesn't exist anymore, everybody, because our podcast producer bit it on a sidecar in the streets of San Antonio. So. In a
Vespa. But I got to eat a lot of food. So I was there for Tasting Texas, which is a food festival organized with the James Beard Foundation. And so it's organized by all these chefs, and it's basically this huge, huge food festival that goes on for several days in San Antonio. And so it was really interesting to see all these different organizations get together and all these different chefs get together and work to create these different dishes. And so I was basically just sampling food for days on end from all these different chefs. So it was like having mini meals constantly. So instead of sitting down for one big meal, I was constantly eating all different sorts of food. And it was amazing.
Perks of
the job. I was very full. So I was very, very full.
Well. Good
so
for
that,
you.
That was what good I did eating. In San Antonio, was I ate a lot of food. The people I was with were like, they had weighed themselves when they got back and they had gained some weight. I did not weigh myself when I got back.
Good job.
That's what happens when you excessively eat. So pick one restaurant. What was the favorite? What was the number one restaurant that you went to in San Antonio?
So San Antonio actually has a really heavy German heritage, I learned. And so we went to Shiloh's, which is the oldest restaurant in San Antonio. And it was really yummy. It was German food. Had no idea.
All right.
We do like German food.
Yeah. They had a really good bratwurst, a veal bratwurst, and it was incredible.
Nice.
Did not realize San Antonio was the place to go for veal bratwurst.
Yep. So that is my, that's where I was. That's my spiel for the day. I think now it's time to get into our earnings palooza.
Palooza. This is where you put sound effects in, Holly. This is where you're supposed to have the button.
Take off my headphones.
We'll take it. Sounded like my kids playing with their action figures.
That's what it felt like to me. Maybe that'll be the clip that I use on social media, is just me going pew, 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 pew.
People will, they won't be able to help themselves. They have to click on that and listen into whatever that's going to be.
Okay, so the exhaustive list of people who have reported. I mean, like, do we even go through it? We were going through it this morning.
It continues.
This morning,
continuously growing. Yeah, there are literally calls going on right now. So we could list them, and then we'd have to come back in half an hour and, like, add more to the list.
So you guys, just each of you pick a few to go over. Let's start with Sam. You just pick some learnings that you have. Just pick something to parse from the earnings that we've had so far.
Okay, let's start with, well, first to just follow through from last week, because we started this last week and what we talked about last week is continuing for sure in the calls this week, which is just that sales do continue to rise, that most companies are showing growth, but for the most part, all of them continue to say that this is mostly because of menu price increases, that that's mostly why we're seeing growth in sales. So I guess otherwise, a few notable trends. I will say technology continues to be a big piece of where these companies are turning their attention. And I think we especially are noticing this in the full service companies. Outback in particular noted the tech innovations that they're putting into both the front and the back of the house to improve the efficiencies of their restaurants. Also, Chili's just reported that they are going to launch a delivery and carryout only location. So a lot of the things that nothing that really jumped out as being totally new to the industry, but just showing how digital continues to really drive performance at restaurants. And, you know, that's full service, that's in limited service. And, you know, something I theorized on the podcast last week, and I continue to think, is that, you know, technological innovations are not only helping to streamline operations, but they're also helping to support off-premises, which I think is becoming a value message for a lot of the companies, that the easier you can get their food, the more perceived value exists in that. So I think that's what we're seeing a lot reflected. Speaking of technology, we're seeing kiosks continue to be a thing, which I say that sort of surprisingly, because we, on a recent session of our Emerging Restaurateur Live Learning Series, our group of panelists seemed to really poo-poo kiosks. Just, and this was a group of CTOs. I mean, it was a group of tech experts, and they didn't seem to think kiosks would be a thing in the future. But KFC announced that they're really pushing hard into kiosks, and Shake Shack also mentioned that kiosks are something that they're really pushing forward with, because they're seeing a lot of success with stores with kiosks. So anyway, all to say that, you know, technology, not only because it's going to help the operations streamline things and help obviously with costs, because the more you can streamline things, the more you can cut back on costs, but also because it really improves the guest experience and the more you can really focus that as your value offering.
Couple things that stood out for me. One is specifically Wingstop. In Q2, they didn't have their best quarter. They saw same store sales decline after really killing it all throughout the pandemic. But they reported last week and they are back on track. Their same store sales were up almost 7% in Q3. So I think last quarter there was a little bit of, oh no, is the Wingstop craze over? Are they on the decline now? And now I think we can safely say that was a blip. Wingstop is just fine. Of course, they're under new leadership this year, and I think now we can say that's going well. They had some outside factors that helped them out. Wing prices are finally lower again. They were kind of the first to really see the inflation impacts as long ago as last year. But wing prices are deflating. Wingstop has expanded their delivery. They're seeing transaction growth. So Wingstop really very strong right now, which I think is optimistic for, you know, the whole industry, and especially the limited service segment. The other thing that stood out to me was the Cheesecake Factory talked a lot about some of their plans for new stores that they were going to open this year. They're having to push back into 2023. This is something that I've heard about sporadically over the last few months from different brands, but seems to be coming up more and more, which is partly supply chain issues are catching up to the equipment and real estate areas, not just menu items, but restaurants are having trouble getting everything they need to open new restaurants. And also just bureaucracy, permitting, those kinds of things are slowing down and taking longer these days. So Cheesecake is the latest big brand to say that they're pushing new units up, but they're certainly not alone. And I think that's something we're going to be seeing quite a bit more of over the coming months.
If I could just throw out a couple other thoughts too, going back to talking about value, it's also interesting how the QSR chains are starting to ramp up their messaging around value, but it's more around bundling than it is around discounting. or it's more around kind of like building your own value deal situation, which I guess I'm a little surprised because we talked about this a little bit last week, but you know, there was some theorizing that value, you know, discounting, especially not only is that very hard to do in an inflation environment, but it's also, you know, going back to the Great Recession, a lot of folks thought that the discounting, once you get into discounting, you can't really pull back from that because you set this expectation for the customer. So we're starting to see, especially the QSRs, really focus on value again. And I think it's not only a sign of just the what effect inflation's having, but I think there's also some positioning here for recognizing that a recession is on its way and value tends to win the day. But what I wanted to really say here was I wanted to point to a poll we ran on NRN's LinkedIn page last week. We wanted to know how our restaurants responding to inflation. And we had over 200 people voted. And I thought the results were pretty interesting because we asked, how are you responding to inflation? 48% said they're streamlining operations. 20% said they are discounting or bundling or focusing on deals. Another 26% said they're doing nothing. They're just writing it out. And 7% said other. So just to say that it's really interesting to see the paths chosen by restaurant companies as they try to find their way around inflation. QSRs really seems to be going toward value again. The full service restaurants are really looking at tech and streamlining operations. You know, who knows how a recession will change all of this, but obviously having to figure out those things to set the path forward for the future. Joanna, welcome.
Joanna.
She's here.
Special guest is here.
In. Surprise.
Hooray, Joanna's here. She's here to talk about Papa John's.
Yes, and I just wrote about it, so it's hot off the presses.
It's almost like we planned it that way.
Well, in this earnings, can we say Hell Week? I don't know if we're allowed to say that.
Well, Holly calls it Palooza, so yeah, I think Hell Week is probably better.
In the midst of that, I covered Papa John's today, and surprisingly, their revenue and sales were down, which is surprising because they had basically been beating Domino's for the past year. And they keep like swapping places because during the peak of the pandemic, like Domino's was the golden child and then kind of Papa John's took over. And it still isn't entirely clear 100% on why, because, you know, they sugarcoated a little bit. I probably shouldn't say that either. Can't have me on.
Anyway, thanks, Joanna, for joining today.
But I mean, you know, if I had to guess as to, or if I had to stipulate kind of why they're not doing so well, but the other two pizza brands are this quarter. I think it has to do a lot with the fact that they're kind of considered a little bit more premium, i.e. a little bit pricier than Domino's and Pizza Hut. And they've advertised themselves that way. That's kind of how they differentiated themselves. But it kind of comes back to bite you when people are kind of counting pennies, pinching pennies with kind of the economic turmoil. So they are starting to do some discounting, which they don't often do. So that's kind of interesting. But if I had to predict, I think that this is not going to be a long-term thing. I think that they will maybe in the next couple of quarters bounce back and continue to do well again because their menu innovation is still kind of a little bit ahead of their other two competitors.
Speaking of Papa John's and menu innovation, I just got to give a shout out to that company for their jack-o'-lantern pizza, which was a big hit in the Okus household last week. And I got to show everybody, this is my kids reacting to the jack-o'-lantern pizza from Papa John's. Look at Jude's face. Look at his face. Look at his tongue. He's like, I am getting in on that pizza. So kudos That's to Papa really John's for their great. Jack-o'-lantern pizza. Anybody who's listening to the podcast has to go to YouTube to be able to see that one.
It's worth it. Trust me.
That's really cute.
Maybe we can pop in and embed into the article page online.
All right. Fair
point.
Yeah,
their jack-o'-lantern pizza has always been pretty popular.
It was tasty too, for what it's worth. I mean, it was just a pizza cut in the shape of a jack-o'-lantern. So
You didn't put candy corn on top?
Huh?
You didn't put no candy pumpkin corn on top?
Oh, I thought you said put pumpkin on top. No. No candy corns. No, no candy corns. We would be the worst chefs. Did they put candy corn on top of a pizza?
That was a thing that was that went viral a few years ago, the candy corn pizza.
Ugh. Oh, wow. That's frightening.
Hold on. Ew.
That's very frightening. Yeah. That's, I'm scared for humanity.
Weirder things have been done.
Oh my God. Weirder things have definitely been done. I'm surprised that TikTok hasn't picked up something even weirder.
Yeah, it was a viral. It went viral in 2017, according to the internet.
Joanna with the facts. She's taking your spot, Leanne.
This is when you segue, Holly. Speaking of Joanna's facts, do you want to talk about the ghost kitchen story you just wrote? See, I just did the segue for you, Holly.
That was a weird segue, Sam. That was a weird segue.
That's what you're for. I'm sitting here waiting for, I was going to say, I'm waiting for Holly to do a segue, but she's not doing it. So I was doing it for her.
That sounds like a really bad podcast. Joanna's facts.
See?
Joanna's facts.
Well, Joanna, now that Sam segued us into your ghost kitchen story, why don't you talk a little bit about the story that you wrote? It was lovely. And it was pretty meaty.
Thank you. I just want to point out that I did not realize until halfway through writing the story that I was writing a story on ghost kitchens on Halloween. And I was very proud of myself for making some spooky puns when I shared it on social media. But yeah, I mean, I basically kind of had an interest after a couple of ghost kitchen companies reached out to me. Ghost kitchen / virtual restaurant companies reached out to me. I should get in the habit of not calling them all ghost kitchen companies as an umbrella term, because most of them don't like being called that. It's sort of almost become a taboo word. And of course, there's all different types of. But anyway, after a couple of them had reached out to me, I had kind of realized that we needed to look back at ghost kitchens, because I feel like, you know, we wrote about them pretty much every day, like the latest virtual restaurant brand every day during the peak of the pandemic. And it was kind of time to return to it. So I wrote a bit about how the off-premises delivery-only restaurant brand has evolved. See, there are like 12 different ways of saying this. The dark kitchens, the off-premises-only, delivery-only concept, whatever you want to call them. I basically was saying that they are stepping out of the shadows. See, Halloween pun, play on words, number one. And becoming a little bit more transparent and a little bit more flexible and hybrid, like off and on premises. So it's not just, basically, it's not, the ghost kitchens and virtual restaurants aren't as mysterious as they once were, aren't as, hey, where the heck am I getting this burger from, as they once were, because customers are kind of demanding that. And so as customer needs evolve, so must the restaurant industry. And not all of these virtual restaurant brands are going to survive and are going to do well. And a lot of the folks that we spoke to, including at the new companies, Umi and Meal Outpost, kind of predicted that a lot of these celebrity-backed virtual restaurant concepts aren't really going to make it and are kind of flashes in the pan. But I guess TBD on that.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, I think that we always, this could have always been expected, but what we're seeing is just the maturation of the space, right? I mean, when you have a new innovation come out, you have sort of V1 and then you get V2, and I'm sure it will continue to evolve and change going forward. But I do like that. I mean, you're right, Joanna. At the peak of COVID, virtual brands and ghost kitchens, it was like this insane innovation that we were like, this is the future. I will never forget the study that suggested that ghost kitchens could get to become a $1 trillion industry by 2023 or 2030, excuse me. And so, you know, there's a lot of hype, and then it just sort of, I don't know. Obviously, post-pandemic, people went back to restaurants, and suddenly ghost mm-hmm. kitchens became less crucial. But what I think you're seeing in the two companies you spoke with, and then another one that comes to mind is Underground Food Court. I spoke to them, their founder, Tiffany Fiedler, a couple weeks ago for Takeaway. And they're all taking parts of what works for ghost kitchens and they're tweaking it. And I think they're especially tweaking it around service, hospitality, you know, making sure that this isn't just some thing that you're throwing out there, and then you don't care if it works or not, but here's your ghost kitchen, here's your virtual brand. Now go do it, you know, take care of yourself. Now it's like, okay, let's take care of the partners. Let's take care of both sides. Let's take care of the, you know, the brand that might be partnering with a ghost kitchen or a host kitchen. Let's take care of the, that host kitchen that is taking on the brand or that operator of the ghost kitchen. Let's take care of the customer who might want to actually come in and order from multiple brands or go to an app and order from multiple brands. So anyway, I think it's obvious that the ghost kitchen idea is here to stay and that it is a great idea for the restaurant, but you have to evolve it. You have to get it to a point where it works for all the stakeholders involved, because otherwise it does become just a flash in the pan.
Yeah, absolutely. And something that that Marcus Pinheiro, who's the co-founder of Umi Kitchen, he told me that he felt like in 2020 there was a big gold rush. I liked that. I liked that comparison. I liked that analogy because it did feel like that. It felt like every. I mean, I know that Holly had this column in Roundup in 2020 where it was just like every week you did like
almost every week, yeah,
virtual restaurants, and there was like 20, 30, 40 of them, and. Now I think people are realizing, okay, you need to have quality, obviously, and transparency where people want to know where they're ordering from. And like you said, Sam, that people might want to even go in person. So we're seeing some kind of hybridization where you can go in person and pick up an order, and it's not like you're just ordering food where it might be coming from, like this mysterious warehouse.
I, for one, am a big proponent of being able to place one order, but choosing from multiple brands. I think that's something that is a big part of this because, I mean, I just had this last week where my daughter loves Chipotle. My son, sorry, Chipotle, not a fan. And it's like, how do we get something he wants and something she wants? Usually one of them has to lose. And so, and look, hey, I'm not unique here. Families all over the world for generations have understood this, that you have to pick one place to eat. So when ghost kitchens can unlock choosing, anybody chooses whatever brand they want. This is where food courts were and food halls were so successful. It's like, go choose wherever you want to eat. But doing that digitally, that's your big idea for the future. Hey, you guys could put that on the list for trends for 2023 if you want. It's a free one. I'm giving it to you.
You're getting rid of the no vote.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, I definitely agree. I don't have kids yet, but my husband and I have very different tastes in takeout and delivery. I feel like he'll want to get like a bowl of ramen or Chinese food. He kind of leans more toward like the Asian category. And I kind of really like the classic like pizza, burgers, that kind of thing. I also like sushi. He hates sushi. So I kind of feel like it would be great to be able to do that, to order what we wanted in one order. However, what I did realize is that most of these digital food halls aren't available in my area yet. And so I think that they need to get on that.
New York City.
No, so they are, here's the thing, is that they'll be available, if they are available in New York, they'll be available in Manhattan only. And then the next place they'll go is Brooklyn. And then they'll be like, what? Queens, that doesn't exist. And So
Anna, you just have to move to Manhattan with me.
Yeah. Well, you could pay for my rent.
I think Sam's doing that.
I'm the one married to a lawyer.
I would just like to say, Joanna, welcome to what it feels like to live in a secondary or tertiary city. You have to wait till it gets to you. Trickle down.
Yep.
Well, so I think that the food hall idea is really interesting because it gets rid of the no vote, which you were talking about a few weeks back, getting rid of like having a salad on a fast food menu. It's the same kind of thing, is that you're just getting rid of this no vote from a family. You're saying, I can satisfy the quote unquote mom of the family who's here to say, no, I don't want to eat that. I want to eat a salad instead. You can have everything and you can have it all. And it just is so, I feel like we're always talking about the same things here in just different contexts. And it's, we're repeating the same themes because the same themes are so constant here in the food world that we're always looking for the same thing just in different ways.
Yep.
I think that the overarching theme here is flexibility and options. That's what people want.
Yeah.
Whether that means the big word that we always use, the big buzzword we always use is omnichannel. Whether that means omnichannel or whether that means digital food halls where I can order my sushi and my husband can order Chinese food.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Joanna, thank you so much for joining us today. And sure. I'm going to throw it over to our interview, Amir Mustafavi, the CEO and founder of South Block, who I interviewed about South Block's growth strategy. Super interesting interview. We talked a lot about what it's like to be a founder. He gave his 8 rules of what it means to own a small business, grow a small business. It's really interesting. Definitely take out a pen and paper for it. So stick around for that. And thank you guys so much for joining me.
Thanks, Holly.
Thanks, Holly.
Bye.
When it comes to finding a one-source solution for all your food service and equipment needs, Broster literally means business. From innovative equipment like their new E-Series line of high-efficiency pressure fryers to one of their franchise-free, trademark food programs featuring their world-famous, tender and juicy, genuine Broster chicken, Broster has been helping operators make their business better for over 65 years. Discover what Broster can mean for your business and visit broster.com today. All right, so Amir, welcome to the show. Let's get started. Let's just talk about South Block. Tell me a little bit about the brand and what it's like.
Yeah, absolutely. So thanks for having me on. Really excited to be here. And South Block, so we're a local brand that started in the Washington, D.C. area, started South Block in 2011. We're a juice bar concept, so we specialize in smoothies, cold pressed juices and acai bowls, which I have a long history with and love affair with. That's kind of what we do. That's the product that we sell, but I always tell people we're really in the people business. We have 12 locations currently open in the DMV. That's the DC, Virginia, Maryland area. Just opened our first Maryland location this summer at Pike and Rose. And we have 3 stores in construction right now. One in McLean, which is my hometown, McLean, Virginia. So that's a homecoming. We're excited about that. One in Loudoun County, Virginia, which is our first Loudoun County, and one at the Amazon HQ2, which is their East Coast headquarters. It's going to be in Arlington at Pentagon City, which they're calling National Landing now. So really excited about the 3 new ones that we have coming up, and just excited about where we're at as a company and the opportunities we have ahead. So excited to talk to you.
It's really exciting because, you know, we haven't really talked to you much and you guys are kind of explosive. I mean, you've had all this growth and we haven't really talked to you that much, and it's our fault. We haven't really been there for you guys.
Well, it's part of the strategy. You know, we like to slide under the radar. You know, I've been in the juice business for 18 years. I started South Block, like I said, 11 years ago in 2011. And one thing I love about who we are as a brand and where we're at is I want to keep us exciting and new and fresh all the time. So when people are just learning about us, I love it. I love that we have so much opportunity still ahead of us and so many new customers to connect with. You know, the more people that are just finding out about us, the better. You know, I want to keep for the customers and for my team. Everyone loves the excitement of like a startup, and like even though we've been doing this 11 years, we still feel very much like a startup. And because we are in a lot of ways, you know, we're still learning and growing. It's been and it has been very explosive over the last few years, and we're very grateful for that and excited about where we're at today.
Let's talk a little bit about the growth over COVID, because you guys kind of had like some growth plans that happened while everybody else was, you know, suffering, really.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, honestly, before COVID 2019, we had our best year ever. We had a lot of momentum, and then COVID hit. And, you know, I'm sure like many others, you know, experienced what do we do when that happened? And I think for us, the thing that kind of, I guess, if you want to call it, saved us is we are very much a solution-minded leadership team. And so we're used to recognizing problems and solving them. We love the challenge. So this was obviously a huge challenge, but I think when you have people that are part of your company that believe in your mission, believe in what you're doing, believe in the bigger purpose, we have a great company culture. We have great people in our company that all wanted to be there to support South Block and to support our community. So that was our focus, is how do we support the people around South Block, our team that believes in us, that work for us, our community that is looking to get our products still, how do we serve them? So, you know, I made the decision from day one that no matter what, we were going to do everything we could to continue serving our team and our community, even if it cost us, because, I felt like that building culture and trust among your team is the hardest thing to do, but it's the easiest thing to break. So, you know, I saw, looking into the future, this was an opportunity for us to really show who we are as a company and really show that our culture isn't just who we say we are, but it's how we live. And when you're faced with a challenge like that, that's when, your true colors show. So I think it was a terrible thing, but it was a great opportunity for us to really show that we are who we say we are, and we're going to be there for our people first. And, I think it's made us stronger. It's developed a lot more trust among our team. Now we are facing a lot of new growth opportunities, because we did, do fairly well, all things considered. And, people are looking for fresher, healthier options as well, kind of as a result of like refocusing on health.
Yeah, that's also one of the things that kind of came out of COVID that you were, a beneficiary of, is that people were really focusing on health during and post pandemic. That was a really big factor for a lot of people, is that they decided to focus more on health and healthful concepts. And so that was really like a boon for your concept to help it grow as well. Did that sort of help you guys in any sort of way?
Yeah, no, I think people were definitely more focused on their health, keeping their immune system strong and staying healthy. And, I think that, along with already having some technology in place that made it easy for people to order and get their food, really helped us out a lot as well. Luckily we already had an app. We were already set up with third party delivery companies. So we had a lot of flexibility in the ways that people could order and get our product. And they were, I think looking for, there's a lot of people looking for all kinds of things during COVID, but one of the things I think was also a focus on healthy eating options.
Yeah. And so, you talked a little bit about technology. What does your tech stack look like? I mean, you guys are a growing chain and you're growing even faster. You have to have a really good tech stack in order to have that sort of growth plan happen.
Yeah. I've, like I said, I started in this business 18 years ago in the juice business, and technology was way, way different than it is today. And it's been so fun to watch it evolve and change throughout the years, from the paper punch cards we used to do for loyalty programs to now all of that being digital and run through your POS or your app platforms. I'm someone that loves technology and have loved watching the evolution of technology in the restaurant industry, and it tried different things. And I think, we're no different than anyone else out there. And that's the cool thing about talking to people in the industry, is whether you're, a brand new company, or you're 15 locations like us, or you're 1,000 locations. I think everyone's sort of facing the same challenges with technology. There's no magic bullet for technology. There's So it's kind of you're piecing things together that work best, and some of it is on purpose and some of it's by accident, just because it's the best thing that works with what you have. But you know, it's something we're constantly evolving and looking at, and how can we improve. And we're actually working on a new updated app right now. And I don't think technology is the type of thing that ever sits still and you ever have solved for it and you're done. And I would say that's actually the case for everything in business and restaurant businesses. You're constantly evolving and changing, and that's what's so exciting about it. And that's what you know, keeps me up at night and gets me out of bed early, is thinking about all the new exciting things we can do, whether it's in technology or other things in our business, new recipes and you know, all kinds of things that are constantly evolving. That make this industry so exciting.
What are some of the ways that you guys have evolved over the years? I mean, you've been in business for 11 years. That's a long time. That's almost since the last recession. And we're about to go into another one. I mean, how have you evolved over the past 11 years?
Yeah, you know, my first location, like a little bit of background. My first location that I started was at George Washington University on campus. This was back in 2006, so right before the recession, right? And it was called Campus Fresh. It wasn't called South Block at that time. I didn't start South Block till 2011, but I had the opportunity to open my juice bar on campus at GW in 2006. And when I opened it, I had no food service experience. You know, I come from a marketing graphic design background. I had a corporate job out of college. I went to Virginia Tech. And my dad was an entrepreneur. He was a business professor and then owned his own video stores in the 80s and 90s. And, you know, was just a, you know, real success story, and someone who immigrated over to this country from Iran and not knowing any English, and eventually getting his PhD and having his own businesses. So growing up, I saw him working so hard in his business and thinking that that's not what I wanted. I wanted a corporate job, and I wanted to 9 to 5, and I wanted my, you know, paid holidays and all that, until I got my corporate job. And I realized that my dad wasn't so crazy, right? I realized that he was not working. He was passionate about what he was doing, and the way he was spending his time every day was what gave him purpose and gave meaning to his life. And so it didn't feel like work to him. So I got that, you know, almost as soon as I got my corporate job. You know, found myself just being very unmotivated and bored every day, and I wanted something more. So I was drawn to the world of these juice bars because of the flavors, but more importantly, the vibe. I love the vibe of these juice bars. I would visit out in Southern California at that time with friends and family. And I wanted to bring that vibe to the DC community. And so I had this opportunity to open one at GW. Really, I had a friend who was an intern in the athletic department, and we took over a bagel shop that was inside the gym on campus, and I turned it into a juice bar. You know, I had a one-bedroom condo. I just gotten married, and we took out a $30,000 line of credit, and I built the counters myself, and we had a juice bar in 3 months. And I always tell everyone that's where I got my PhD at GW, because I knew nothing going into it. I did realize that I had a knack for creating smoothie recipes, like throwing things in a blender. So that was lucky. But I learned about running a business and from my time focusing on building that business at GW. And I tell people that's where I got my PhD, was from learning there at GW. And then kind of some of the lessons I learned from there, a lot of the lessons I learned from there, I took with me when I started South Block in 2011. And so I always tell people the first lesson that I learned, and I have a list that I call the Great Eight that I'd love to share with you. And this kind of leads into that, because the first lesson on my list that I learned, the only lesson that I knew when I opened my GW location, was don't be a jerk. And the only reason that I learned that lesson is because I did have 2 weeks of food service experience when I was at Virginia Tech in college. And I quit after 2 weeks because my manager was a jerk and I didn't want to put up with it. Right. And I think a lot of people in food service, you know, especially then, the industry just had a reputation for managers being jerks. Right. And I think that's one positive thing that's come out of, I don't know if it's a result of COVID or what, but I think there's been definitely more of a focus on our industry of treating our people right and not being jerks to them, which has been a great thing for our industry, because I think there was sort of this image for our industry that restaurant managers were a jerk. And that was my experience when I first got my job in the sandwich shop, and I quit because my manager was a jerk. So that's my rule number one, is don't be a jerk or your employees will quit, just like I did. They have no reason to stay there if you're a jerk, right? So don't be a jerk is my rule number one. And my rule number two is something I learned from operating that business at GW, which was how important my connection to the community was in drawing people to my business. So, you know, we, as I mentioned, my parents had video stores in the 80s and 90s, and I worked there, and my mom worked the daytime shift. And a lot of people come in and see my mom because they knew her. She knew what movies they liked, what their preferences were. She knew their kids' names. So they would come in to see her, right? So that connection to community. When I was at GW, I made it a point to make sure that we were connected to the community, the student organizations. We would give back through fundraisers. And even though we were up on the second floor in that gym with no exterior signage, we drew people in from that community, even people that didn't go to the school, people that worked at the GW hospital, the law firms around the area, the Department of State, which is nearby. They heard about us and they came in and found us up on that second floor. So that really proved that the connection to your community is so beneficial when you're operating a business, because there's so many people that are selling food. So what's going to connect people to your brand, right? And so they have to feel a connection to your brand, and you have to make it a conscious effort to connect with your community. Do you want me to take a pause for a second, or do you want me to keep going with I have my grade eight. I can keep going, but
no, keep going with your eight. We're only on number two.
With my grade eight. Okay. I'll try to run through my grade eight. Okay. So my number two is grade eight, and of my grade eight was connect with your community. And that's when I opened South Block in 2011, the name South Block came from this idea of connecting to community. A lot of people ask, why did I name it South Block? And the reason why I named it South Block is I wanted our business to have more meaning than just selling smoothies and juices and acai bowls. I wanted the name to represent our purpose. You know, our mission is to build healthier communities one block at a time. And my theory was, when I opened this first location off campus, I obviously couldn't call it Campus Fresh. So I didn't know what I was going to call it, right? I didn't want to call it something generic, like something smoothie or something like that. The space I got was 700 square foot on the back of this tower. They were building two new towers in the Clarendon community in Arlington. There was one space left on the back side of it that had a huge column down the middle, 700 square foot. Nobody wanted it. And I was the only sucker that was interested in taking it. But it was my first business outside of campus. So, you know, I felt like I could make it work by connecting with the community and offering the community an amazing product that the community didn't have. So the name South Block jumped out at me because, like I said, they were building two towers. One was the North Block, one was the South Block Tower. So I'm looking at the lease and I had no name picked out. I see South Block Tower. I'm like, wow, that name really stands out, because what we're going to do is we're going to build and create a community on this block. around our business, around our involvement with the community. So everywhere we go now, no matter what block we open, we're there to build community around that block and to support that community. So that's really the true meaning of South Block, is creating community wherever we go, adding value to that community.
I was curious about the name, so I'm glad you explained it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm glad I got to fit that in there. So my rule number three is put your team in your dream. Okay. This is a rule that I came up with a few years ago when I was driving my daughter to school. I have two daughters and they always tell me about their dreams, right? Like a lot of kids do. And everyone knows what it's like to hear about someone else's dream. Usually you don't understand it completely. Someone's really excited to tell you about their dream and you're not following along, but to them, it's the most exciting thing that's happened to them in the last 24 hours. And they're telling you about this crazy dream and this adventure they had, and you're not following, right? But what I noticed is, if my daughter's telling me about a dream and she's saying that I was in her dream and I was doing this and that in the dream. So she's telling me a dream. She goes, "Dad, and you were in the dream. And then you were, you know, whatever, like riding the unicorn and flying through the sky." And then all of a sudden, like when I'm in the dream, then I'm asking questions, right? I'm like, "What was I doing? What else happened? What happened to me? Then what happened?" So now I'm a lot more engaged. I'm asking questions because I'm part of that dream, right? I'm in her dream. So I noticed that, like, every time they were telling me a dream and I was in the dream, I would be a lot more interested and engaged. So I translated that to business and said, you know what? Your business can't be all about you, because people will get bored. They'll only pay so much attention if your dream, if your business is only about you. So you have to find a way to put your team in your dream. And if you can do that, your team will care a lot more about your dream and about your business. So we've done a lot of things to help include our team in our dream. You know, mostly everyone who's part of our team is here because they believe in what we're doing as a company. You know, we do a lot of things, like I said, to support our community. One of the things we do is I started a nonprofit organization called Fruitful Planet, and we give fruits and vegetables back to underserved communities. And so there's things like that, and there's things we do specifically for our team, like profit sharing. So I do open book management. You know, I think about when I started my business, why did I start my business? What motivated me? And how can I share that same motivation with my team? How can I reward my team in the same way that I get rewarded? If I do good, we all do good. When we open a new store, we're all excited because we're all doing better and we all have more opportunities. We're all making more money. So include your team in your dream by things that you're doing from a culture standpoint, but also from a business operations standpoint. Give them the same opportunities to succeed that you have as an operator, as a business owner, and your team will care a lot more about what you're doing and about your success, because it's not about what you're doing anymore. It's about what we're doing as a team, what opportunities we have as a team. So rule number three, put your team in your dream. And then similar to rule number three, my rule number four is create paths and opportunities. So one of the things I'm known for is I create a custom pair of Vans every year. They're called like the Amir 2022s will drop this year. And I design a new pair of shoes and they're, you know, custom designed for South Block. They usually have a message on the back like "You Rock" or "BU" or something. And I give all of my leadership a pair of these shoes. And the reason why I do shoes is because to me, shoes are very symbolic, right? Every time I give these shoes to my leadership team, it goes along with a little speech about how we as leaders have an important responsibility to create paths and opportunities for others so that one day those following us can walk in our footsteps and walk in our path. So you have to create those paths for people as a leader. And it's not just me, it's all of our leadership, right? Because that's really the true purpose of a leader, is to create more opportunities and paths for other people so that they can walk in your shoes and walk in your path. And to me, that's what a true leader is. And that's what these shoes represent. So that's number four. And I hope these rules, like for me, when I listen to podcasts, I'm always looking for, and I feel like you have your audience, right, is probably a lot of entrepreneurs and people that are operating businesses, and probably not a lot of them are operating like huge businesses, right? They're probably emerging concepts. So for me, I want to do everything I can to share what I've learned with others who are, you know, on the same journey as I am or just starting. Because when I listen to podcasts and read books and things like that, I'm constantly looking for like little nuggets I can write down and, you know, learn from other people and from their mistakes or from things that are working for them. So
that's exactly what we like to have on the podcast. We like to have conversations that give people these nuggets that they can learn from, that they can really take back with them and say, you know, I got something out of this conversation that I can use in my business, that I can use moving forward, that I can actually take with me and use. So you're giving really helpful information.
Yeah, I mean, these are just things I've learned and kind of written down. I call them my building blocks, and you know, I'm constantly learning. I've learned so much from my mentors and others in the business. I'm so grateful for that. And I just think the more we can like share and help other people, you know, I make a ton of mistakes. I make mistakes every day, but you know, those failures are opportunities to learn and do better. So I think you have to embrace those failures, and you just have to continuously, want to learn and find solutions and then just keep moving forward. So you know, you're never done learning. So
never.
So that was we're only halfway through. That's my rule number four. Rule number five is have a strong bias towards action. I think too many people have ideas to start a business or ideas for their business, and they spend too much time analyzing the data or thinking through the process. And of course you have to do some of that. You can't just go into things like with no thought behind it, but I think that you have to have a strong bias towards action. So don't overanalyze. I think the first step is the most important step. And then you have to go into it with the mindset of, it's not going to be perfect when I start, but it's going to start, and I'm going to figure out what to do along the way to improve it. But I think if you wait too long to start and you don't take action, then you're just falling too far behind, or someone else is doing it and not you. So have a strong bias towards action. Don't be afraid to get started. It doesn't have to be perfect. Just start, and then have a mindset of figuring it out after you start and continuing to improve, because it's never going to be perfect. And if you wait for it to be perfect before you start, you're never going to start. So have a strong bias towards action is my rule number five. Rule number six is make your customers the hero. So I think too many businesses make themselves and their brand the hero. And I think when you do that, again, like, you're not talking to people in a way that they care about what you're saying. So you have to figure out in your business, what is your hero? What is your customer? What is their goal? What do they want to achieve by visiting your business? How can you solve a problem for them? How can you give them something that gets them closer to achieving their goal? And identify what that goal is. And then through all of your messaging, your marketing, your social media messages, your newsletters, all of your communication in your in-store marketing, whatever it is, you guys can't see me, but you can see me, Holly. I'm wearing a hat that says "You Rock." It doesn't say "I Rock" or "South Block Rocks," right? Because I'm talking directly to our customer, that you rock. Our goal is to make people feel awesome. That's what we've identified as our goal at South Block, is that our customers want to feel awesome, whether it's through the food they're eating, through the experience they're having, through the vibe when they're walking in the store. They want to feel awesome. So how can we make people feel awesome? Positive messaging is a huge part of it. In everything that we do, you rock, believe in yourself. And also, you know, I want our business to have a larger purpose. Like if I was just in this business to sell smoothies for, you know, doing this 18 years, I'd be very bored. But making people feel awesome and building healthier communities, like this is something I can be passionate about for a very long time. This is something my team can be passionate about for a very long time. So focusing on how we can make people feel awesome, sending that message to our customers whenever we can, and making it all about them being the hero and not us. So rule number six is make your customer the hero. Your role as a business is to be their mentor, to be their guide. So if you think about it in terms of a movie, it's like you're Yoda, right? Customer is Luke Skywalker, and you're trying to, their goal is to, you know, defeat the dark side. So in your business, you're Yoda and your customer is Luke, and then you got to find out what their goal is. So that's number six. And then number seven, kind of touched on this, but put people over profits, right? And what does that mean? A lot of people say that, right? So the ironic thing about putting people over profits is I've found that it's actually the way to make your business profitable. So a lot of people say, of course, you have to have a profitable business. Like, what do you mean people over profit? Like, we got to make a profit, like, or we're out of business. We're not running a charity, right? But that's the thing. You focus on your people, the culture of your company, the guest experience, how you can create opportunities for your team, how you can make your work environment an amazing work environment, how you can give back to the community. Those are the types of things that I think create a strong business, create a strong culture. You know, culture is the type of thing. And by the way, if you have a business and you don't feel like your culture is what you want it to be, I was there, right? When I first started, I didn't know about building a culture. I was just trying to keep my head above water and pay my bills, right? And then next thing you know, you're growing a business and you're like, wow, what happened to my company culture? Like now I got, and so somewhere along the way, I was like, look, I want a company culture that I can be proud of, that people can be proud of being a part of, that people want to be a part of. And I think that when you put people over profits, I know a big topic of conversation today is labor, right? And it is, it's definitely a challenge and it's a struggle right now. But I think the brands that are doing better than some others are the ones that have a great culture and that have a reputation for being a great place to work, because people do have a choice and they want to spend their time somewhere where they feel appreciated and respected and part of the dream. So putting people over profits like pays off in so many ways and only strengthens your culture, strengthens your business, and you know, allows you to face these challenges like we're facing today with labor shortages. It makes it an easier hurdle for you to overcome when people are wanting to work for your brand because you do put people over profits. That's my rule number seven. My rule number eight is give it a larger purpose. And we kind of talked about this already, but no matter what your business is, give it a larger purpose than what product you're selling. What are you trying to do with that business? Like I said, for us, like it's about supporting the community, like in many different ways. But we have our nonprofit Fruitful Planet where we give back. Through COVID, we were able to donate over 50,000 pounds of fruits and vegetables back to our community. Everyone's purchase at South Block makes a difference. We donate a small percentage of every purchase from South Block to Fruitful Planet that allows us to get fruits and veggies back to the community. We're also very focused on mental health and suicide awareness. You know, we think that this is such a big epidemic, especially among our youth right now. And we have the opportunity as businesses to be part of that conversation in a meaningful way. So obviously we can't solve these problems on our own, but we can be part of the conversation. We can be part of helping to bring awareness and money to these causes, and to support these causes. So these are things that are important to us. These are purposes for South Block that are bigger than showing up every day and selling a smoothie. So what is your purpose as your brand beyond the product that you sell? So that's my rule number eight. So I'll run down my eight real quick. So
everyone get out your pen and pencils. Everyone get out your pen and pencils. Get ready to write down these rules really quick.
Yeah, here we go. So rule number one is don't be a jerk. Rule number two is connect with your community. Rule number three is put your team in your dream. Rule number four, create paths and opportunities. Rule number five, have a strong bias towards action. Rule number six, make your customer the hero. Rule number seven, put people over profits. And rule number eight is give your business a larger purpose. That's my great eight.
Well, those have been so, so helpful. I mean, like, that's just so helpful for anybody who's opening up an emerging chain, who's really trying to grow, who's learning, or somebody who's just starting their first business, who just wants to grow, or even somebody who has a business who's looking to change their culture, who's looking to really start something fresh. I mean, these are great rules for people who are already in business, people who are looking to start a business. They're super, super helpful.
Good. I hope that there's some value there for anyone listening, and you know, that's what it's all about, is learning things along the way. You know, I have these eight rules to keep me focused as well, and hopefully they can help you know, others listening too. Because it is tough. It's a challenging, especially it was already challenging before COVID, and you know, now it's even more challenging. But I think if we've learned anything from it, is just that we are stronger than we thought that we were, and that we can overcome challenges. You know, especially if we focus on people and we stick together as a community.
Well, that's such a positive note to end on. Thank you, Amir, for joining me today. It's been such a pleasure. You've given us so many great tidbits of knowledge. It's been so wonderful.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. And anyone wants to learn more about South Block, please find us online at southblock.com or follow us on Instagram @South Block. I'd love to hear from you.